All right, recording on this computer.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a new Zoom privacy thing. This meeting is being recorded.
Oh, so I got hit, got it.
Yeah, makes sense because it's actually like a law in Connecticut. It's got to be two-party, whatever. All right, so I'm going to go over here. I'm going to go live to Facebook. Friends reunion. I hate Sons of Sam. Covering bullet.
I was like, where did these freaking lights come on my screen? And it's your lights. Never mind.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's funny.
I want to share it on a page, and the page is not the Valley Independent Sentinel, but the Insufferable Podcast. You ready? I'm going to start the music.
Perfectly fine.
Insufferable bastards.
Those of you that are into podcasts like to listen to that kind of stuff.
Treasure to me. I love Judge Dredd. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
Hey, everybody. My name is Carlos Danger. Welcome to Insufferable Bastards, formerly known as the Mobile Horror Companion. Sorry for the delay there at the beginning. I couldn't tell if we were live on Facebook or not. It's been so long, Brian. It's been so long since we recorded. So that's my co-host, Mr. Brian Spears. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
So, I mean, the agenda, maybe before we get to that, I mean, it's in the description. People can read, though I don't know, some of our things I see on Twitter directed at us. I'm not so sure people can read. But so maybe we're going to talk about the Friends reunion, right? Come on. That's what you all expect us to talk about. It was like a month ago, but we're finally weighing in. Then maybe we'll talk about WandaVision and Batman versus Superman. I don't know. But after that, we're going to talk about why we hate the Netflix documentary Sons of Sam. Neither Brian nor I could make it through the entire documentary. So I guess we'll talk about at what point did we finally throw in the towel and say no mas with the latest Netflix exploitation doc. And then I thought we would talk about Bullet, the movie Bullet that came out in like 1968 with Steve McQueen. Real quick, because we're not that smart and we don't have that much time, okay? So we're talking, these are little quick hits, as I've heard them referred to. So before we do that, though, I guess, you know, I'm doing like not a dump run, but I'm doing the thing where you call up the town and they come bulk pickup, that's what it's called, right? So I'm throwing out all sorts of crap on my my front lawn right now. I got mattresses outside, chairs, the bed, the kid's bed your brother gave me 100 years ago that then I ended up sleeping on for a while for reasons that I don't want to go into. And I ended up breaking it because I'm way too fat for it. It's now outside. We still have the other one. But, you know, as you go through the crap, you find crap. And I just wanted to go through some VHS tapes.
Oh.
That I found.
Yeah, because I've been picking up a bunch of them.
This is just stuff. I didn't even know. I mean, I knew I had these, but I just forgot I had them.
They're VHS. Yeah.
It's VHS. Yeah. So it's, and they're like, they're from a while back. The first one, I'll just go into it. Fort Apache, the Bronx, starring Paul Newman, Ed Asner, Ken Wall, Danny Aiello. I need glasses. This is so embarrassing. In a bombed out wasteland stands a police station, less a precinct house than a fort in hostile territory. Very controversial for its time. Fort Apache, the Bronx. If you've never seen it, check it out.
That's a really good movie.
Yeah. Be prepared. You know, if you're of that persuasion, I guess, if you're easily offended, going to offend you. Pam Grier. Pam Grier is another one who's in Fort Apache, the Bronx. Then, I mean, so that's a real, that's an old one, right? I don't even know when that came out. Got it. It says Palmer Video on the bottom of it. So who knows where that's from? It was probably the criminal front video store that I worked for. Probably knocked it off from some other video.
It's in good shape. It's in good shape.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, yeah, it's got a little wear on the, what do they call that? The spine. But then after that, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know, everybody's movie. I don't even, I had no idea I owned this. I don't know where I got it from. It's got to be some reissue because it kind of looks brand new. I mean, there's the tape there.
Well, I mean, even if it's a reissue, man, it's from 1999.
Yeah, it's going back a year. And this is kind of ties into, I was talking about, we're going to talk about Bullet a little later. Didn't know I owned this either. Point Blank.
Oh, wow. You know, that I think that just came on HBO Max maybe or Amazon right. Prime.
And I think, yeah, one of those.
I only saw that once, and that's one of the ones I put in, like, I want to watch that.
Like, yeah, it's one of those things, like, the critics, if you read any, like, film criticism, they all love it. But, I mean, we'll get into it with the great Lee Marvin, of course. And then last but not, and this one I remember getting, and I'm embarrassed by it, but it's Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers. That was the thing I was on. I was up at Cape Cod, and there was no cable. I think it was like even before sort of everybody had internet, that was still like a, you know, if you rented a place, you didn't come with internet. And so we bought that from like Walmart to watch something.
Well, that's like a 3-hour movie. So you knew, you know, that's your night in, you know, that's the night where you don't go anywhere. That's
yeah. If you're that in type a, if, of deal. Yeah. If you're in a completely like dead relationship at that point too, but nobody wants to break up with the other person. That's what I think of Lord of the Rings. So yeah, we're definitely live. There on the Facebook, I tagged a bunch. I was really obnoxious right before we came on. I just tagged as many people as I could to tell them we would be talking about the Friends reunion. But it annoys me how many people, mutual friends we have, that don't allow themselves don't to be allow. Tagged. You know, first and popular. Foremost.
Treasure to me. I love Judge Dredd. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.
So the man formerly known as Johnny Ganache from Pint of Comics, he'll confess his love for Judge Dredd publicly, but God forbid another podcast can tag him on his personal page. I see how it is, Mr. Johnny Amenta. Also, Nate Rann, not children's author. What do they call that genre of literature?
Young adult?
Young adult. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He also doesn't let himself be tagged.
And a former mate of ours, or oh, that sounds so dumb.
Mate?
A former buddy of ours from the convention scenes.
That's right, yeah. So, all right. So let's get into this Friends reunion. You know, I don't know. Do we have to introduce it to people? Do you need to see a preview of it? I mean, obviously, if you're, you know, of this earth, you know what the Friends reunion is. So I've been talking long enough, Brian. What did you think of the Friends reunion?
I mean, I was not, I think one time on this podcast, you said I watched Friends. I'm not a huge Friends guy. I mean, it might've been on in the background.
No, I remember specifically, because as I was watching Friends, I was like, wait, am I dreaming this? No, this really happened. It was like you had gone to college. You went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, got your degree.
Yeah.
And you know, in doing gore makeup and all that good stuff. And I, at the time, had like, you know, I had discovered beer. So I had just drank my way out of the University of Maryland at College Park after being there for like 8 weeks. And I went down to your house. And at the time you were in the downstairs behind your garage.
Can I defend myself?
And wait, let me just go through. And I walk back. Right. And you got all your art stuff. Right. And this is like, we hadn't seen each other since high school. We're now like adults. Right. We were 21. And I walk in and you have some show on. I had no idea what it was. And I'm like, what are you watching? Because, you know, it was Friends. That was my introduction to Friends. And you were like, oh, dude, the chick's really hot, man. And this was like, all you know, right, probably right, season one of Friends.
I can. All right. I'll say that. If I said that, then all right. I mean, but. Or was it on? Because again, when I lived in the basement, you know, I had 1 through 13.
Dude, I walked back.
I didn't even have cable.
You were
so
just
watching on NBC.
Oh, channel wise. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But your attention was
13 channels.
I thought I was interrupting a date because you were just, it was you and Friends. You were totally.
It was 1994. I was probably high out of my mind.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's actually, so, yeah.
You know, say that. Like, I'm sorry to say, but that's probably more because again, have I seen Friends? Yes. Does everyone know a little bit about Friends? Yes. So the last time I saw you recently, just real quickly, you mentioned the friends. And I said, all right, I'm my buddy at work, Josh. He was like, oh, you're going to hate me for saying this. I watched the Friends reunion, you know, because I'm very snobby at work on what people watch.
Very judgmental.
Then I said,
God bless you. If we can't judge anything about, you can't judge anyone about anything anymore.
Well, listen, I don't even want to know your
TV taste. That's still okay.
I'm not going to bash you over politics or any of your life choices. My whole thing is whatever movies you watch, that kind of tells me who you are.
Right.
So Marvel. Everyone was talking about Friends.
Morrissey.
Just as much as, you know, these superhero trends. Like last week, all the news was about Friends, the Friends reunion. So it's pop culture. I got to watch it. And I'll be honest, I have HBO Max and I have not turned HBO Max off in months. You know, except for when I'm at work, that is like, I have not went on because every time I go to Prime, I just look at nobody and it's still $20 and I can't bring myself to do that.
When is that going to come down?
I think the 14th or 15th, it comes out for sale.
Okay.
So it probably comes out and it'll be cheaper, but like, even at this point, I've waited this long. I want to pay $5.
I want them to pay me.
So I had to watch Friends. I had to watch the reunion. Plus, let's be honest. I mean, all the news about Matthew Perry, I had to watch it for myself because, again, I wasn't going to watch people sharing TikTok stories or Facebook, you know, stories so diluted. I wanted to watch the show. I loved it. I thought it was well done. It made me laugh. I thought that the Joey guy.
I had to get a papow in there.
That Joey guy was the most likable guy in the world.
He became every man. Oh, like as soon as he walked onto the stage, at least every man for a person over a certain age. If you're like 43 or above, you're like, yeah, like Joey became our guy.
I thought
because he's fat, Jennifer, didn't really seem to care.
No, and also like, you know, he was the good looking guy of the show, and now it's like he could be an accountant right now, and he seems like that's kind of his persona. Like
he's got his own podcast he's doing about Marvel movies and stuff. Yeah, he's totally an everyman now. It was awesome.
He also, I felt David Schwimmer was working really hard to be like the best guy on that. Like he really like acted like, I mean, I haven't seen David Schwimmer, you know, I mean, he was in that OJ show, and I thought he was the worst part. But he, like, to me, like, was really reading those lines, really went up, really, like, made it seem like, hey, Hollywood.
He does this with Jennifer Aniston.
Him and Jennifer Aniston said, hey, Hollywood, we're still here. Courtney Cox, I don't know, man. Everyone made a big deal about Matt LeBlanc. I mean, Matthew Perry. Courtney Cox was a little disturbing. And Lisa Kudrow seemed the most down. Another one. Her and Matt LeBlanc seemed like, hey, we did our run. We had our fun.
Yeah, I think Lisa Kudrow has proven to be, she's definitely like the coolest person of that cast. I mean, up until Matt LeBlanc walked in there with his shirt tucked in and his gut hanging out, and he just kind of sat back. I thought he was going to take a nap on the couch, you know? Like,
and at the very end, when they go back and they sign the wall.
I shit here.
That was hilarious.
That was
legitimately
funny.
That was a juvenile, whatever, how old they were when they ended this show, you know? It shows he wasn't the most mature guy in the lot.
Yeah, you know, and I got to say, like you, I mean, I first got exposed to Friends, you know, in that disturbing chapter in your basement back in the, whatever, early to mid-90s. It had to be like, actually, when I think about it, it had to be 1994 or 1995. Like, I can almost pinpoint it. It was right around then. And then I had an ex-girlfriend who was way, way into Friends. Like, and this was it was still on TV and it was also in syndication. So, and I think she owned the DVDs maybe or whatever seasons were available. So, I mean, it was like a continuous loop, you know, of Friends.
I think someone, every one of us, and then maybe that's why I could watch the reunion. Every one of us knows somebody like that.
Yes,
yeah, I have a cousin who's obsessed and she's like 10, 20 years younger than me, but like obsessed with it.
So I had seen all of them, right? And I thought, you know, I got to say, like, I didn't hate the show, but it's not a show I have ever revisited.
No.
In any way. Not like, you know, The Office, I'll go back. Anytime The Office is on, I'll just stop maybe, especially if there's nothing else on, and I'll sit there and watch it. But anyway, so, but I did think this was hands down the best reunion show that's ever been on television. I mean, and there's not much to compare it to, because then I Googled, well, what else is there? And just since the pandemic happened, there's been all these Zoom sort of reunion fundraisers. Yeah. And then there's like the Paley Institute or whatever it is, or like there'll be some like Foundation for the History of Comedy will do these reunions. But this was a whole other level. I mean, it was really well done. It was superb. I mean, I gotta say, like, they draw you in emotionally. The way it was, like, this combination of backstage access as they react to each other, which seemed very genuine.
Although the first 10 minutes I could have lived without.
It worked for me. I thought it, like, everyone coming in one at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of worked for me, because I thought it was just going to be them sitting on a couch and that James Corden guy, who I can't stand, you know, just sort of, you know, being a cheesy talk show thing for an hour. But it was much beyond that. It was this hybrid.
Yeah, I like that it was less that James Corden guy. I like that it was them sitting around. It was them interacting with themselves. And even I liked when they were reading old scripts and then going back and showing those clips. I thought that was like, all right, I haven't seen that. That was funny.
It's like whoever produced it or directed it or whatever, edited, they took like, okay, oh, Zoom, oh, table reads are a thing now. Game of Thrones had the last table read even before the pandemic. They took that and there was a portion of that. Oh, people like behind the scenes, there was that. Oh, people just like, you know, the cute, chubby talk show host guy being cutesy with all the actors. There was that. So it had something for everyone. And I was really impressed. I mean, yeah, and everyone's read like the critiques of it, that it, you know, it doesn't address like the fact, excuse me, that like Friends never had a black dude or a black girl on it the entire time it was on, which is like weird looking back now.
It is weird, but I mean, you could say that about regular TV, all of regular TV. And when everyone was saying that, no one was watching The Wire. So that's what I'll say too. So it was all right around that time.
I thought they at least would have addressed it somehow. You know what I mean? And also the fact that, like, you know, they were all, didn't they all like stage a walkout? There was all that stuff. Yeah. They all demanded a billion dollars. Money.
Yeah. And that was the thing. They did the one for all for one. So they're one of the few shows that said, no, we all get the same amount of money. And yes, they like threatened, you know, oh, we won't be in this season. I think there was a walkout. There was a lot of that going on. They were very, very well paid.
There was a lot of whitewashing. I mean, it was, you know, but those are small critiques. Overall, I mean, it definitely held your interest for like 2 hours. That's the other thing. I couldn't believe how long it was. I had to watch it in two sittings. But I got to say, and then like addressing, well, all right, first of all, you brought up Courtney Cox. And not to be, I mean, I'm obviously, you know, I got eight chins going on here. Like, I'm nothing.
Quite ugly.
Look at me. Yeah, but there was something sad about the whole affair that I couldn't quite put my finger on. I mean, maybe it's the fact, like, these are people, you remember them a certain way, and we remember them from when, you know, in 1994, we were both 20 years old, 21 years old. So you have those, like, that incredible period. I know we had a lot of fun together in those years. Yeah. You know, that was a good time. That it seemed like there wasn't a care in the world or a state trooper that could stop us. You know, and it was a good time.
Yeah.
And then you see like these people that were like, maybe we weren't like religiously watching Friends every Thursday night at all, except maybe you. But
no.
You know, it's there, and you see them on People magazine, and they're all over the place. And then to see them is sort of it's like shocking. Because they're not what you remember. And Courtney Cox with the plastic surgery, I mean, God bless her if she feels good about herself, but it was something sort of.
It makes me feel older, I'll be honest, man.
Yeah, it's kind of like, if she looks like that, my God.
I'm not aging gracefully. Yeah. And I guarantee you, she's way healthier than me. She would have aged gracefully. And again, to each his own. It just, that was more of the shock to me than anything, because I don't follow them. I mean, I guess I see Jennifer Aniston because she's more in the news, but I don't follow Friends.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't follow.
Yeah, it was shocking.
People. It which is why, like, I also think David Schwimmer was really trying to get a job. He's trying to get another network show because he seemed to really be like very energetic, more so than he seemed to be trying and acting.
Yeah. Like everything was very emotional or very dramatic. Yeah. It was all very, very, but yeah,
I will say this, man, that scene, I'm sorry that I'm interrupting because I am going to give it one high praise. It was the blooper where what's his name? They're going up the stairs with the bed.
Oh, the pivot. Yeah.
I've never seen that show. So I never seen that. That might've been the funniest thing because again, I guess I always look at David Schwimmer as the jerk in Band of Brothers that everyone wanted to kill
he was perfectly cast in that.
And he was, and like, I guess I always think of him like that. So he seemed to have a sense of humor, like when he was filming that show, the Friends. And that was like, you saw how much fun they were having. And just in this, again, I do try to find, I watch a lot of morbid and I prefer more of these crime drama stuff. It's nice to sit down maybe on an afternoon or an evening and watch something like lighthearted and just let it go, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. So yeah, so that's the Friends reunion. Let's talk about Matthew Perry though. So I mean, my summary, I loved it. I think it's one of the best. It has to be by far. It set a new bar for these reunion stuff. I mean, there'll be a lot of copycats now. I think they'll be trying to do this, all these new streaming services. Everything's going to come back. It's also weirdly sad, but maybe that's my own thing as I approach, rapidly into middle age. But all right, so Matthew Perry. So a lot was made. You know, look, it's been a rough couple of weeks for me. Stuff's going on. And I'm literally like right before we turned on the cameras, I got 4 Motrin, 2 extra strength Tylenol. I got amoxicillin in me. I got a tooth that needs to come out, but I can't get it to come out till next Friday. You know what I mean? So I get the dental part of it. I've been in pain. I get how like there's something weird about dental pain where it just, you know, you get that kind of thing. That's been me for the last week, just staring and it just feels like my skin is just falling off my face. I get that, but like, I mean, it just brought to mind Artie Lang, his whole sort of appearance, everything going on with the teeth and just his whole demeanor. It just reminded me of Artie Lang, you know, like there's clearly gotta be, I would assume, you know, I don't want to get sued for libel.
Well, I mean, I watched an old Bill Maher interview with, Matthew
substance
Perry.
Abuse. I was going to say he's admitted to substance abuse in the past.
And he basically said he's jealous of people that can just go out and like weekend party or, you know, have a lost weekend because he just never came back from those lost weekends. So, I mean, he does have a history. And again, the way they edited the show, I will say this, all the clips that they put up, I felt that was salacious and almost picking on him. Did it make me watch? Maybe a little. Yeah, it did.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Like I thought, I didn't think he was bad in the, I didn't think he was that bad during the, I mean, I saw him slumped over, I saw him, he wasn't the exuberant self he was.
Wait, you mean
show.
The clips they used to promote the reunion of Matthew Perry or the,
or just the news stories that were based on the clips that they put out?
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I just found like that was a bigger deal. Now, yes, I'm sure, dude, I'm sure they edited things down. I'm sure he had they picked the best stuff out of him. I thought he had a great closing line for the entire show.
Hey, just interrupt real fast. Anderson Ev says Schwimmer has a show on Peacock, which I didn't realize that.
Oh, all right. So there you go. That's why.
Sorry, I interrupted your flow there.
But that's the whole thing with him. I mean, again, he has his demons, man. And maybe they're gone. Maybe they're not gone.
And we know at our age and the circles we've been in, when you live like that, I mean, that's definitely after a while when you're pushing 50 or you're 50 and over, that's what you look like. I mean, that's just the way it is, So I hope the guy's okay and all that. But I agree with you. He wasn't. I thought it was weird. I thought there was one or two scenes where it was like they'd be on the couch with what's his name? Jimmy
James
Fallon,
Gordon.
English, whatever the hell that guy's name is. And like Matthew Perry's there, but then they go, Matthew Perry's not there. Like I thought that was going on a little. Didn't he like kind of disappear for a little bit?
I didn't notice that.
I thought there was at least one thing where they were there as a group and then suddenly Matthew Perry wasn't there when they did a group shot and then they come back and he's there. But you know, I don't know. Maybe I took too many 2000.
Maybe I didn't, like, again, it was one of those things that was on.
Oxycontins.
I didn't notice.
But all right, so that's the Friends reunion. You know, I again, if you haven't seen it, even if you've never seen the show, the reunion is that compelling. It's interesting. It's an interesting.
I'll say this, even if you didn't like the show, because I can't believe anyone has not seen it unless they're 8 years old. So if you didn't like the show, you're un American if you don't like the reunion.
That's right, Trump. All right, so next segment here, that's the Friends reunion. Why we hate Sons of Sam, the Netflix documentary that came out at least a month ago. And it's one of those things. I mean, Netflix, they're just like, it's so AI and Terminator 2-ish to me. You know what I mean? Like, they just shove Sons of Sam in front of you. You know, you have to watch it. If you're scrolling, yes. It's like, it just keeps coming up, you know, because you've
in every category, every category that you could ever imagine.
Right. So I don't know. I guess I'll start off about this one. I had a problem with it pretty early on, and I'll get to where I turned it off, but they describe the guy as an investigative reporter, the guy who has this theory that there was, you know, more than one Son of Sam. And, right, I'm a small-time reporter, but I've been around investigative reporters. Like, I've been I worked at a newspaper where there was, like, legit investigative reporters, you know? And that's, like, it's become a marketing term. Like, TV, they'll have investigative reporters, like your local TV news. But no, like, investigative reporter is a thing. It's a skill. It takes years to become an investigative reporter. You know, like, no investigative reporter, I mean, they don't just get the job. It's like they have a track record and they've done stories, and then they become, you know, like, oh, they have a knack for doing investigations. So they do one after the other, and they become investigative reporters. You know, it's not a marketing.
Salacious. Topic. It's not current affair. Ish.
It's a high skill. It's a high skill of reporting, right? Like, I'm not an investigative reporter. This guy, they refer to him as an investigative reporter, and then they say that he was doing, at the time, in-house public relations for IBM. Yeah. That pissed me off so much. That'd be like, you know, Brian, you're a makeup artist, you're a sculptor, right? And I don't even know what the comparison is there, so I don't even know. But like, a guy who's doing public relations for a corporation, I mean, that is as far away from investigative reporting as you can get. I mean, there's no, are you kidding me? So, and then like his big investigation is this. This is his first one. He's got no background in it. So that just, it just, and I know this is weird. I'm being OCD maybe, but I just couldn't get past that.
No, this is exactly what bothered me.
It just, like, if this is such utter upfront bullshit 10 minutes into this documentary, the rest of it's got to be garbage. You know, in-house PR for IBM? Are you kidding me? And then the other thing, I turned it off at that point, but I went back maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, to check it out again. You know, maybe I was wrong. And then I'm like, wait a second. Like, the Son of Sam, like, you know, we were born and raised in Somers, New York, you know, and 60 minutes directly north of the city. Like, Yonkers, like, is it part of the same county where we grew up? So they're in Yonkers, and, you know, David, the Son of Sam dude, Berkowitz, that was his name? Berkowitz, yep. Right? He was from that area, right?
I was going to say, I went to Catholic school, so every mother from Queens
or knew Yonkers, right?
Berkowitz. Yeah, Queens or Yonkers knew, oh, yeah, yeah, he, you know, went to my school, you know, he was, you know, I rode the bus with him. So that type of stories.
Right, yeah. So when they start lending credence and pushing the whole satanic panic stuff, like, there was this cult going around in North Yonkers on the Hudson River, like off North Broadway near Executive Boulevard, doing these animal no, that never happened. We were 8 years old and knew that wasn't happening at the time, you know. And they started, like, they're just stating it as fact. And then maybe they debunked all this, but I that's when I turned it off. I was like, this is just bullshit. they're pushing satanic panic, which is like, you know, we, you know, everyone knew that was a sham when it was happening. Aside from Glenn Baisley, the rest of the world knew that was all bogus.
The not far from me in Croton Falls, supposedly there's Satan caves. Listen, I've never been to them because A, I don't believe in it, but it's a cave where somebody wrote Satan on the wall.
Right. Like,
I don't, a bunch of stoners were hanging out there. There's probably a Nazi symbol there. There's probably the Motley Crue or whatever, the sign of the devil, the star.
Shout. There,
you know, there's all that like stuff that badass outbackers do to look cool, but it's just, you know, it's dirt bags in the woods.
Dude, my vinyl three ring binder from high school, I had so many pentagrams and 666.
You could have been a son of Sam's.
Right. I wish they, I mean, at least they could have pushed, like, of all the hysteria from the early 80s, they went for the satanic panic type stuff. They could have done like the daycare child molestation stuff that was also the rage. They could have done like, oh, whatever, like race riot stuff that was happening in like, Bensonhurst and all that insanity. But to push that.
But here's the thing. None of it was corroborated. This guy's story is corroborated by himself. And the moment I turn it off, the one person that corroborates his story is the son of Sam.
Who's perfectly rational and totally.
I made it that far to the minute he started interviewing and I turned it off. So I don't know how it ends in the middle of that, his interview where he's like, yeah, there's other people that I was not there for killing. Now, going back to your investigative reporter, I read somewhere Jimmy Breslin, who, I mean, he's a
columnist. Yeah.
Yeah. But I had a lot to do with the son of Sam at the time. And I just know him because of that Bronx is Burning, but because he has like sort of a central character in that story. He said all of these stories, I guess at that time, were BS because he said he was in the interviews when I guess he was being interviewed by the police or prior. He knew so much information that it's never been released about the murders. That he couldn't have just been like, you know,
some kind somebody of else did some that. Kind of third, I mean, wheel.
And the other suspects the guy throws out are all dead.
How convenient. So they can't sue you for slander or libel.
Now, Netflix, if you made a movie about this investigator's life and gave him a cool, like, you know, it started Billy Kudrup as the guy, and you made a movie that this is an alternative storyline that could have happened, I might have agreed with that.
Yeah,
I might have like watched that and been like, oh, wow. And it would have made me look up and see that this is all bullcrap. But to tell me this is a documentary, to tell me it's I'm just getting, you know, documentaries are documentary. We seem to have lost that.
Especially on Netflix, man, because they're cheap, right?
Well, to me, it's just becoming
the new slasher.
Yeah. It's also that new A&E, like, you know, A&E used to always have the murder mystery. They just moved it to Netflix. They took that for next. Netflix will be making Hallmark movies, you know, and like stuff like that.
They're already doing like the home makeover, how to organize your closet stuff. Yeah, it's such a depressing time in culture.
And again, I watch Netflix all the time. I mean, I'm not knocking them. They're doing, that's business. I get it. It's show business, you know, like I get it. But there's so many people that like share these stories and believe them and, you know, talk about how like, oh, whoa, this is an alternative take. No, it's not. It is one madman's idea. This guy, I mean, if 20 years ago, he would have been on, like, if it'd be QAnon. It's like, he's another QAnon kind of guy. He's just making up his own story.
Yeah.
And
it's like, it kind of feels like Zodiac, the David Fincher movie, which was admittedly fiction, is a truer documentary, whatever the word is. You know what I mean? It's a better documentary than this movie, Sons of Sam, that pretends to be a documentary. It's just bizarre. Like, I find there's more credible stuff in Zodiac.
In Zodiac, yeah. At least Zodiac gets it, like, the facts right.
Right, and yeah, it kind of comes at like at an angle where you're like, "Oh, this is compelling." But this is just, I don't know. I was so angry.
I did not find it compelling. And also, again, I've looked up serial killers all the time. You know, I've seen that interview. I remember that '90s interview. I remember this all came out again when we were in high school because I remember reading about like, "Oh, these sacrifices might have happened in Yonkers, in this park." They like brought the stories back up.
Didn't you? I thought you did. You film Flesh for the Beast? Wasn't that the park?
I don't know. Wait, well, Uttermeyer, whatever. We were in a mansion.
I think
and we might have filmed there near.
I think it's the same thing. It was an estate, and I think that I could be wrong though. I thought that's North Broadway.
Executive Boulevard.
Sawmill Parkway, Executive Boulevard, on the top was North
Broadway. Right, that T where the Chili's used to be.
I'm like 90% sure that's the same. It's the same grounds.
Same ground. It could be.
But maybe I'm wrong. If there's anybody from Yonkers out there, set me straight. I met a guy who's living in Yonkers the other day. And I was like, oh, I lived in Yonkers for 10 years. He's like, whereabouts? And I was like, I don't know. I can't remember. So awkward, you know. The guy just thought I was totally, you know, just blowing smoke up his butt. But anyway, so that's that crap. So finally, Brian, I thought we would talk a little bit. Oh, and actually, we got one more thing after this we want to talk about. But I just wanted to mention the movie Bullet, right? 1968. I think it's Peter Yates directed it. Yeah. Steve McQueen, Robert Vaughn, all kinds of random, perfectly cast character actors who maybe were in like bit parts in a bunch of other cop movies from the 70s. But Bullet was a movie, like, I was exposed to it later, and I always found it compared to, like, and the same thing with Point Blank that I had mentioned earlier. You know, if you see Dirty Harry and the French Connection before Bullet sort of, at least in my experience, it just seems boring compared to the French Connection and Dirty Harry and even, like, the 7-Ups, you know, because I don't know. There's just not a lot happens in Bullet. And
he's not an anti-hero as much as the other guys are.
He's not nearly as colorful. He's just,
yeah.
But like, I don't know. I was sitting on the couch and I was on, and I probably missed the first, you know, 10 minutes of it. But I don't know. I was just sitting there and it finally like dawned on me. Like the movie's so simple. And it's just about this cop, and this was a trend of those late 60s, early 70s crime movies. It's just the obsessed cop. He's just the hunter. They should have called the movie The Hunter, because all he is...
It was in another movie, The Hunter.
Right, which is like not a good movie. But, you know, I think Leslie Ann Warren, right? Isn't she in that?
I think so, yeah.
And he was like, that's when he was pretty sick. He was pretty sick with cancer, I think, when he made that. But anyway, like, I mean, Bullet finally worked for me and I really appreciated it. And I'm not sure how. I just really respected how simple and straight ahead that story was. And, you know, yeah, it's not an action movie. There aren't gunfights every 5 seconds, but it's just this dude and how his entire being, no matter what happens to him, including like if it wrecks his personal life, if it wrecks his career, but they don't say any of this and he has no big emotional outbreak because he says nothing. Like that, like Steve McQueen in that movie, he barely registers.
It's really a concrete Western kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. But you know, it just finally clicked with me. And also I never realized, but apparently I'm the last person on earth to realize this, the parallels it has with Michael Mann, both Thief, which we've talked about a million times on this podcast, and Heat. And the parallels with like the Robert De Niro character in Heat and the end of the movie, they're both in an airport. The last scene of Bullet takes place is this foot chase through an airport. It's the same. It's very, very similar. I don't think Michael Mann has never like said, oh yeah, I was paying, paying my respects to Bullet. But like, it's just about this guy, just like De Niro has the code. And it's the same thing. Steve McQueen is just an obsessed cop. He's going to find out who killed his he got a guy killed essentially, and it was on his watch.
On his watch, yeah.
So, you know, and he's almost like he's got Jacqueline Bisset as like his, you know, exotic girlfriend, whatever. You know, he brings her along and they find a body together and she's like totally freaked out. And he's like, it just says nothing. Just basically like with the blank, he's like, sorry, that's the life. And it's just so cold and calculated, but it totally works. And there's that great car chase. But,
yeah.
I know I'm not making a lot of sense, but I love the fact, you know, as a movie fan, this is a movie that I had tried to get and I just didn't get it. And it just suddenly clicked with me, which is so rare. And it was such a cool experience that I want to go revisit Prime Cut, because or Point Blank. Well, Prime Cut's another one. That's another of that era. a copish crime movie that I want to revisit. So anyway, that's what I have to say about Bullet. I don't know if, I mean, it's obviously like, it's Steve McQueen, as legendary as he is. You know what? He had the Magnificent Seven, which is kind of a cheesy Western, you know. Yeah. It doesn't really hold up.
It's very Hollywood. It's Tombstone. It's the Tombstone of its time.
Right. It doesn't hold up compared to, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, or what Sam Peckinpah was doing with The Wild Bunch. Right. And that's a whole other thing. At the same time, like Bullet was happening, you know, a couple of years later, Peckinpah makes The Getaway, bringing the head of Alfredo Garcia, these gutter, dirty, offensive crime movies that are just grimy as hell. So Bullet always, but I don't know, I really respect it for what it is, you know. And it's like the Jaguar of those crime movies, you know what I mean? It's just really sleek, you know. So yeah, anyway, that's that. And you want to add about Bullet?
No, you kind of covered it all.
All right, so the other thing going on I just wanted to mention quickly is CT Horror Fest is coming up again.
Yeah.
Right in Connecticut. And I'm kind of like, usually I'm like real excited, but I know there's just so much going on in the world. We haven't even, we were vendors 2 years in a row, but I usually put in my vendor and reserve those tables right away, but I just haven't done it yet. I don't know. I got to get this feeling kind of blue. You know what I mean?
But I hear you.
They did announce Keith David's going to be there.
I think
we might have mentioned this, but I mean, Keith, that's a huge get. I hate to use that term. It's so cheesy. But, you know, that's a great guest for the Connecticut Horror Fest, which if I had it up, I would tell you when it's going to be.
It's on the 19th, September 19th, maybe.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. Saturday, September 18th, starting at 11 a.m., according to this. Yeah. Saturday, September 18th, 11 a.m. All right. Wait, say something. I'm going to cough.
It's in a rubber factory or a rubber street or has a rubber.
No, it's a community center. I mean, I don't know what it used to be. It's a big open wound up there in Naugatuck, which is in Connecticut's Naugatuck Valley. It's a former industrial, it's right where I live. These are all former, factory towns where the factories closed down, but the remnants of them are still here, even though they've been closed since.
But isn't it near like Rubber Road or something?
It's a six Rubber Avenue. Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look him up on Facebook. It's put on by the Horror News Network, but Keith David. Yeah. Of course he's from They Live and The Thing, you know, two of the greatest genre movies ever.
He's in Platoon.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I forget that. Yeah. That dude was in Platoon. I do feel like Platoon, for some reason, maybe it's because Oliver Stone has become such a whack job and he's almost become a parody of himself. Which
not
probably started
that movie. That movie was dead on.
I can't say enough. They should have like a special wing in like the Oscars for Platoon and what Oliver Stone did with that movie. And Keith David is so good in
He's so good in that, man. Oh, see, and you know what? Like that, that's probably a bigger movie to me than his performance in The Thing or They Live. I mean, I love him in those. And, you know, but like I went to Platoon with my old man and he was a Vietnam vet. He never talked about Vietnam. I've said it before, I think, on here in our other podcasts. But like my dad said, that's Vietnam. Like that's because he hated that I liked Apocalypse Now or, you know, like there was a TV show, Tour of Duty. Like he hated the sensationalized. You know, like
a romanticized.
Said, yeah. He didn't. He wasn't a fan of Jane Fonda at that time. Like that's the epitome. And to me, so that to me is that's like Keith David's excellent in that. Excellent.
Yeah. And it's just strange to me, like, you know, the movies from around that time. I mean, Scarface became this massive cultural thing, you know, but like. Platoon seems to have not, I don't know, it doesn't seem to have its place. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just feel like we don't hear about Platoon, and maybe because it's such like a personal movie that it's not going to be like have a cult following like Evil Dead 2, you know what I mean? But I think, yeah, it's a masterpiece, man. I can't tell
that's
you. Like,
a
just
great
that-
film. And the actors in that, it is worth watching for John C. McGinley alone. Like, he is incredible, you know, in that. I got a bad feeling about this one, man. So like
Willem Dafoe, who's William, you know, Dafoe.
I mean, it's got a young Johnny Depp before he went nuts.
Tony Todd.
Yep.
Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen gives the performance of a lifetime. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's hard to fathom that that's Charlie Sheen.
Forrest Whitaker.
That's right. Yeah, Forrest Whitaker. What, the guy from the band, the rock band back in the day? Whoever that was.
Living Color, Vernon Reed.
He's in it. Yeah, it's just I think that's one of the great movies. Like, it's
Corey. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting the name wrong. It might have been. Maybe Vernon Reed's not the guy. Sorry, maybe it's this other Corey guy.
We didn't plan this out, but I think it's really a masterpiece that deserves to be mentioned with Goodfellas, with the Shawshank Redemption. You know what I mean?
No, like, I agree.
Forget
100%.
Donnie Darko and Boondock Saints. God damn it! And whatever the Avengers are up to, I'm gonna piss off Johnny Amenta.
Well, it's real quick. Documentary on Shudder. It's called. I don't even know.
Porn?
No. It's a horror movie list movie. It's like 2-3 hours. This is part two. They did the first one. Oh my God.
Eli Roth or something like that? Is that Eli?
No,
that's AMC.
No.
I don't get Shudder. I'm too cheap.
I guess I'm screwing it all up. It cuts deep. I don't know. Something like that. But what they did, the first one was all horror movies that, like, you know, as a horror fan, you're supposed to love. This, they came out with part two, and I got to commend them on it. It's a better list. It's got, like, Henry on there. It's got movies that are, like, I think are more, like, just fun. It had Dead Heat on it. Like, not the best movies. It had a movie that I watched that I never saw, Vamp. It made me watch Vamp. Like, had a better
Vamp
list.
Now?
It's a bad 80s movie with Grace Jones. It's a cheesy vampire movie, you know, a day in the life of like three fraternity guys. And it's got like the Asian kid from 16 Candles in it, Chris Makepeace or something like that from one of the
My Bodyguard
Meatball. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's got like, it's just a total 80s movie where vampires can, they got to make it to the end of the day. It's not a great movie, but it's fun. And what I liked about it, In Search of Darkness or Deep. I don't know, man. This is a great plug. But go to Shudder. It's like a brand new release.
Figure that
it's
shit
a documentary
out.
On all like a list of horror movies. It's like 4 hours long. The first one was 4 hours as well, or 6 hours. But you know, that's where they did The Shining, The Howling, The American Werewolf in London. They give you movies that, like, hey man, this is the best horror movie of its, you know. This is a better list because it's movies that you just want to sit down on a rainy Saturday and watch.
These kind of weird ones that stick in people's minds for whatever reason. I'd also point out that I think in a lot of ways, I remember first watching Platoon. That was a horror movie in a lot of ways. That was terrifying. Like when Charlie Sheen goes on his first night mission, I mean, terrifying. I think I knew right then and there. And at the time, my brother was in the Marine Corps.
He
had newly joined the Marine Corps. And I was like, I could never, never. I think it's sixth grade. I figured out I could never do that. I could never.
Well, I remember,
military.
A smart ass kid that I was. Hey, Dad, did you ever kill anybody? Which you just, you know, and my dad, you know, if you knew him, you know, shut up. You know what I mean? Shut up. Like that's, you know, I watched that movie whenever. I mean, I think we were in sixth or eighth grade. It was one of those.
It was
one
sixth
of those
grade. Came out in 86. Came in 86.
So he took me and he saw that. And he goes, that's. Every question you have is answered in this movie, and that's all I'll say. So I never made those dumbass remarks again. Like, you know, like I knew, you know, he didn't love everyone. I think because also at that time, kids generationally, the youth were more into Full Metal Jacket because.
Well, and not only that, what was Rambo? That was the same time Rambo came out. First Blood Part 2.
Missing
that came out
like my dad hated those missing in action movies. He hated those. So that movie just it. And I do think what you said, I think what's his name? Oliver Stone has won off the deep end a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I have
and he
a
earned it,
love.
Though. You know what I mean? He went through that. God bless him. He can do whatever he wants.
I have a secret love for JFK because it's so over the top. But I think now every movie he makes JFK look like, you know, it's a serious documentary. You know what I mean? Like all his movies now got, and I really do think maybe that's kind of put people forget about Platoon.
Yeah.
Because it was nominated for Best Picture. I think it did.
It won. It won.
Yeah.
It definitely, like it won. Yeah.
It's an incredible movie.
Right. And there's probably the not that anyone's watching this, literally no one, but like maybe they'll be like, what are you guys talking about? Because I remember like we would say this with our former co-host Joe sometimes. We'd be like, this movie doesn't get its due. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? It definitely is. But I don't know. I feel like, yeah, it doesn't get its due. We don't hear enough about Platoon. It seems to be a little bit forgotten, which I guess makes sense because it was like the same thing about the Vietnam War. It was kind of like people just wanted to put that behind us. And then the 80s, like we went back and won it with John Rambo and steroids. But it's, and now, you know, the Vietnam veterans, we're starting to lose them. You know, they're of an advanced age now, you know, so.
I guess a bitter guy when it comes to this, but we celebrate our vets so much now. Well-deserved. I'm not knocking that. But back then, those guys didn't get celebrated. Like, again, my dad, he did not talk about it. He was also not Mr. Rah, rah, rah. I served. He had his, you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran hat. But he never, you know, you didn't speak about it. You didn't make.
Right.
You know.
Well, it is interesting the way that just in our lifetime, since we were kids, the way that's turned where it went from being like you would hear because we were too young to experience people not respecting Vietnam veterans. You know, I think when like in the 80s and when Platoon came out, there was the whole reconsideration of like the whole America as like a collective body was like, oh my God, I can't believe we did that.
That's when the memorial started going up and all that stuff. They started taking it. Yes.
How do we disrespect these kids who did nothing but then be drafted and do as they were told. But now we're at this extreme where it's like, you can't even tell sometimes if the sentiment
is real because
it's all corporatized and it's everywhere and it's a marketing thing. I don't know.
But I also said this at work this week, just talking movies like those Rambos and those testosterone action movies, which, hey, I loved. You know, that was my youth. But that's sort of what's got us in our predicament today.
Like, I'll say it too. I think like Rambo First Blood Part 2 there's a direct correlation between that and between, Donald Trump being elected president.
Yes, yes. And I totally agree. I said the same thing this week because I said First Blood is a better movie. But we don't even call that First Blood anymore. It's a Rambo movie. Once Rambo became Rambo and it's America, like we've taken that to the, you know, to the extreme now. And it was meant to just sell tickets. That was made on cocaine and like, you know,
just romance. That's just parodied in True Romance. Yes. That's what it was. Yeah. And I definitely believe there's a big segment of the population of the voting block around our age, guys who look like us. Well, now that I shaved my mustache, they took that as literal and that was their whole philosophy about everything. It's like, fuck yeah. You know, whatever that's, what was it? Team America.
Team America. But they probably don't think Team America is a comedy.
No, that is, that's an anthem. So, it is sort of sad and weird and hilarious. But, we're the insufferable bastards. There you have it. That was our first episode in a couple of weeks. Thanks to our one viewer. I was looking good. I was like, oh, did somebody? I'm like, oh, no, it's a message from my brother. I got to get that. My brother's responding to a message I sent at 3:00. See where I am. In Search of Darkness. We do have. All right. Thank you so much. Anderson Ev. Is it Anderson Ev or Anderson Eve?
Eve, I think. I think Eve.
Eve would be EVE.
Oh, all right.
But anyway, thank you, Anderson Ev, so much for watching. I'm sorry I'm belching into the microphone. So maybe we should call it a day, and we'll see you next time on the Mobile Horror Companion. Oh, wait, I get to play the music now. You're right. Oh, wait, I got to find the music. Actually, I'll just do this.
Treasure to me. I love Judge Dredd. God. I absolutely love Judge Dredd.